So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
Today, we are still recovering from CES. It's weird. It's a huge hangover. It lasts a couple of weeks. But there is some news, and actually turns out there was some huge news this week when the FAA grounded flights across the country on, I believe it was Wednesday morning, due to a computer outage, and we will dive into everything that went wrong there. But also, the state of air travel right now in general, it seems like it's kind of a mess. Airlines are trying to spin back up after, not even after the pandemic, but certainly as we're recovering from the pandemic. And it turns out we are seeing a lot of the flaws in our current systems, and seems like there's a lot of work that needs to be done. As always, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to like, subscribe, whatever, on your favorite podcatcher of choice. If you're watching us on YouTube, yeah, give us a like there. Drop us an email at podcastengadget.com. You can typically find us Thursdays on our Engadget YouTube live stream at 10:30 a.m. Eastern. If you want to see us live, you can ask us questions. Sometimes we'll show off gadgets. It's a lot of fun. So here's what's up. Wednesday morning, I woke up to a lot of news basically saying that flights across the country have been grounded. And it's a pretty wild situation because it turns out that the FAA started learning that there were issues around the NOTAM, the Notice to Air Missions system. And this is what tells the FAA if there's, you know, any problems on the ground, on runways, if there's any traffic in the air. Basically, it's a big warning system that tells planes like what's up and gives people a lot of warning. Tuesday night, there were a lot of issues with the system. And it turns out as of Wednesday morning, the FAA did what I feel like everybody does. Like, if you come to me with a computer problem, a tech problem of any kind, I will tell you to please turn it off and on again. As we have learned from the IT crowd, it is the one golden rule. And the FAA ended up doing that for the NOTAM system on Wednesday morning. I think as of about 7 a.m., 7:30 a.m., and then by 9:30 a.m., flights were restored. So that was like a whole cascading thing, right? If you had a flight before 9:30 a.m., it was basically canceled or delayed. Thousands of flights across the country were canceled and delayed. Mm-hmm. It's like, here are the numbers. 9,000 flights had been delayed. 1,300 had been canceled. Kind of a huge mess, like a huge cascading mess. And I feel like a lot of people may have just slept through it. You know, it's one of those things that like came and went, unless you were traveling or watching the news, probably had no idea this was happening. I found this to be kind of odd and kind of a sign of like how fragile our infrastructure is. What did you think, Sherlyn? You know, you travel a lot. You get a full sense of our airplane system. Yeah, you just got back from CES. I don't know if you were affected by the Southwest air travel stuff too over the holidays, but yeah, what were your thoughts hearing this?
First of all, this is my first time hearing all the details, the scale of it, the like number of flights. I kind of had a sense preparing for the show what was sort of happening, but I feel like y'all, this country is wild. I always think this country is
wild. We're a big country.
You're a big country.
Yeah.
But you also...
We're not Singapore. We're not a freaking, just a bit of an island or a bit of, what is it, a peninsula?
We have like one... Yeah. No, we're an island. We're an island.
Yeah.
We have one main airport and one like military smaller
airport. That's so hard. It must be so hard to take care of all that, Shirley.
Oh, yeah. But our airport is one of the, like, it's literally the best in the world. But also we have volume too. It's not like we have none. It's not like, so anyway, we just know, don't look at just Singapore. Look at Germany too, right? Like
anywhere,
not all German airports are great. Yeah. So I look, air travel is hard. I get it, right? You have to be so careful. The FAA has to be so careful. And people don't seem to know. Here's what frustrates me is that, like, I can be a bit of a, like, easy to irritate sort of person. I am very sensitive. So,
Sherlyn can be easy to irritate?
Oh, yeah. The number of times I've gotten mad at Devendra for no reason. Yeah. So I'm also a seasoned traveler. I'm the sort of person, I have TSA pre. I'm, like, walking through security because I know exactly what to take out and, like, have ready and how
You're like George Clooney at the beginning of Up in the Air. You're just, like, flying through airports. You know exactly what to do.
Sure.
Yeah.
Totally. And that's why when I see people not doing the so-called right thing, I get very frustrated. So like when the plane is taxiing, someone just stands up and takes their stuff out. I'm like, that's an FAA thing. Come on, sit the hell down.
I mean, that's whole etiquette thing. And I feel like etiquette across society has broken down in general. Have you experienced any weirdness in terms of your flights? Like more delays, more annoyances when it comes to actual flying these days?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was so stunned when I came back from CES. All my travel for CES went like clockwork. Really, nothing bad happened. Amazing. It was amazing. Yeah. Really, the main issue I had with CES travel was the plane on the flight back was too cramped. It was just tiny. I'm not a big person. And I came back with like a pinched neck. Mm. It was really bad. But I did in May, last May in 2022, right as I think everyone was sort of getting out of their homes and traveling for the first time since the pandemic, I had flights canceled on me, right? Like I had, I flew to Maine and Portland, Maine had this tiny little airport, small little runway.
I have questions about why you went to Portland, Maine of all places, but okay.
Oh, I love that place.
I mean, you're a big Stephen King fan, I guess. Like you really got to check out his hometown.
Yeah, sure. And also lobster cruises. And like my parents were sick of New York. I was like, what's a good place to take them that isn't like racist, you know? So anyway.
Wow. You just really don't know.
I don't know. I was like, all right.
Maineys are fun. Yeah.
Yeah. But there's those people in every state. Anyway.
Yeah. But
back to the travel story with Maine, right? Like what happened was it was raining in New York. And so again, the same issue, cascading flow of events. Like my first flight got canceled. I tweeted angrily. I was informed by Zach Honig from the points guy. He was like, oh, I see that this airline is still flying out. He was trying to help. And I booked the next flight, the flight that he recommended. I think it was a Delta flight. We got to the airport with like time to spare for that like rebooked flight, only to find out it got canceled like while we were there, like at the airport. Like United did us a favor by telling us early it was canceled. So we didn't even leave the hotel when we found out. So we were rebooking at the hotel. But then I got there and Delta was like, sorry, bye. And I was like, what? And then they rebooked us on flights the next day. We had to go to different airports. It's a mess. Like one for me, the fact that like a little bit of rain can really mess up a person's day. Look, I get it. Weather, tricky, really shitty to fly in bad weather. You don't want to do that. I wonder if there's a way around it at all, right? Like other than the computer bugs thing where if you just upgrade your software, maybe it will be like...
It's hard. Better. It's hard to upgrade software. It's hard to upgrade software at a federal level, you know, across the entire country, especially when there have been like a lot of issues. So like here is what's up. Let's have some more details about this story. Experts told NPR that the NOTAM system has never gone down like it did on Wednesday. The last time there was a nationwide ground stop was during 9/11, right? And I remember that morning. That was a horrible event. And it was just like a very strange time, but not something that happens very often. So to see this essentially happen, which came down to, I believe it was a database flaw, as I read in the New York Times, just weird little database bug, and the whole system has to be rebooted. That seems like a problem.
Why didn't it come up before? Like, I have so many questions about this situation too, right? What happened? Was it a hack?
It's not a hack. Like, from what we can tell, it's not a hack. In fact, a lot of people are saying our system is actually a little protected from cybersecurity because it's all ancient. So it's actually, it's hard for hackers to get into the connected systems like NOTAM. Let's just say that the FAA has been under fire for a long, long time. You know, it's an underfunded agency. It's been going through a lot of issues for a while. In addition to the funding, like people are saying like these systems have had to be updated for a while. Don't forget that the FAA is also under scrutiny because of the Boeing 737 MAX debacle, where I feel like we just forget about these things that happen. But remember, Boeing had this plane, had two massive crashes in Indonesia and Ethiopia in 2018 and 2019. It killed 346 people. Turns out Boeing ended up paying billions because they sort of lied about the safety information and the information they gave to the FAA about this plane. But also, the FAA outsourced their oversight to Boeing to basically regulate itself as they were developing this plane. I'm reading from the New York Times, that practice was allowed under federal law partly because the agency didn't have the resources to do the work on its own. And that is just like a funding and a resource level issue. So hey, Boeing screwed up, but man, I think the FAA, whose job it is to like make sure air travel and the equipment going out there is safe. Like, it also seems like a big screw up on their part. So our system has been a mess for a while. The pandemic sort of exacerbated a lot of this. But yeah, thoughts.
It's like the companies make a lot of money. They have $2.5 billion to pay. And the people that need the money, like the FAA, to really do the right thing and like really make sure things are safe for us passengers, don't have the money. It's just, I don't know. Something feels
off
about that
balance,
right?
That's government, baby. That's like the system we're living in where, you know, the companies can make a crap ton of money, you know? But the FAA's funding comes down to what I think Congress gives them, right? Like, it comes down to what lawmakers allow. I have read that this year that the FAA's like overall, I think platform, like their funding and everything is going to be reworked this year. So maybe lawmakers can be like, hey, maybe we should give them a little more money. Maybe we should like support this platform. Yeah.
I'm going to rant about something that we, I'm sure, have all thought, and no one's, I'm sure people have ranted about before too, right? Which is that these, So the Congress has to be like, okay, here's a new budget for the FAA. That money is going to come from somewhere. They're going to take it from somewhere else, or they're going to increase taxes or whatever. They're going to find somewhere else to take that money from. I'm just mad that we also gave the airlines a bailout during the pandemic. These guys make a crap ton of money. So, this is a whole separate issue, but yes.
I know.
It's a totally separate issue. But like, we already like have to, you know, our taxes fund, I guess, the FAA, right? Mm-hmm. Am I wrong there?
No. It depends. It's complicated. Partially, yes. Partially, other government programs. Like, money comes from all over the place. Yeah.
So we pay the FAA and we pay the airlines to fly on
their
planes.
Well, we fund the FAA. I'm sorry, not pay. My bad.
Yeah. Like, we help. Our money goes towards
the FAA. Money goes there, yeah.
From taxes. And then we also pay. Anyway, I'm just ranting about, like you said, a thing that people already are aware of, but like you don't get angry until you think about it.
It's angering to see. I think I was more angry when Delta was like, oh man, we're in trouble, guys. The pandemic is killing air travel. We need money. Please give us some money.
Oh yeah, you know what I need? Yeah. Legroom. You know what I need? Seat space.
But 6 months
toilets
later.
Toilets that don't close in on me. Anyway,
6 months later, Delta is like, oh, we're just going to fire a lot of people. It turns out we can save money by not having flight attendants and other people on staff. Then flash forward another 6 months, they're like, oh my God, we don't have anybody to man these planes. What's happening here? So yeah.
Part of this, I feel like I don't know if it's fair to be as upset as I am, because it feels like these are problems that will that just happen because they are the way things go.
This is the way our society is set up. Yeah.
Right, unless there is the way, like, someone had incredible foresight and was like, and some people do, they're just not in the right positions of leadership or authority, but they could be like 3 months before May, be like, oh, you know what, maybe people are going to start traveling again, let's hire people back. No, because they're all looking at bottom line only. This is capitalism, whatever.
You're not gonna do the thing that is their impetus isn't to like do what's best for their customers, right? It's to do what makes them the most money and what makes the stockholders happy. And unfortunately, a lot of the times that involves like, hey, cutting as much money as you can. Oh, people are complaining now. Let's rehire people. Treating people like pawns rather than like, you know, actual
human
beings.
Thing that annoys me is that we're seeing a lot of good practices emerge in businesses in specific industries. I think there are some startups in tech that are doing better things, at least in HR, right? Like they're treating their workers better, whatever.
Some,
I know. Mm-hmm. But then you look at airlines and the airline industry, and I haven't seen disruption on that level at all. I don't see it like a little upstart.
How do you disrupt an airline, right? You become Richard Branson. And you start Virgin, you know, like
Virgin's not really doing well.
That's a whole other problem. But the only way to disrupt the airlines is to become an airline and be a billionaire and be able to afford that. So anyway, Jeff Bezos Air, Amazon Air, they actually already have planes for shipping. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? But I just want to bring up like this whole issue because it was only a couple weeks ago when Southwest's system completely collapsed over the holidays. And that was a whole separate thing. It wasn't tied to the FAA, but it was tied to the way Southwest basically books flight attendants. Like that's what it really came down to. It was an archaic system of predicting where flight attendants are and trying to like book, like get them to work on a nearby flight or something. And apparently it was a very old system. It was not something that could be easily changed. And as flight delays and the weather over the holidays really like hit a lot of flights, Southwest just couldn't recover. Every other airline had a few, like they had delays, but Delta, everybody else, kind of figured out the situation. Southwest basically collapsed under this. So more than 2,500 flights just on the Wednesday during the holiday season. So I forget the exact day that was, but 62% of Southwest flights were canceled that one day. Just a complete meltdown. There was a lot of footage of people stuck in airports basically saying, oh, we were trying to travel for Christmas or trying to go somewhere warm. You're just screwed, right? Like you,
yep.
People stuck in airports for days. Southwest is the biggest airline in America when it comes to the amount of passengers. So maybe not the most planes, but they move a lot of people because they're relatively cheap and they have like a lot of systems in place to like keep things going. Turns out it just kind of fell apart because of this. They're going to have like a federal investigation into that as well. I'm sure the NOTAM system outage today is something that the federal government's also going to be looking at. But it points to like the bigger problems we're having all around. You know, our systems are falling apart. Air travel in particular is very unique, right? Because it relies on a lot of people we don't normally see. It relies on the availability of pilots and flight attendants. And there's a shortage of them. A lot of people have been fired and laid off. And we're relying on ancient systems, too, that don't really recover as well when there are issues. So we don't have a solution. It just seems like a mess. Yeah.
I mean, again, this is a unique situation. I think the Southwest one was a fairly, like, tricky situation. I know a lot of people who were stranded during the holidays. A lot of people who thought they were going to spend Christmas with family, like, you know, across the nation were, you know, we're just stuck at home. So, but the thing is, I was just having a conversation with someone recently around security. And the problem with things like security and regulations is that so often they're focused on specific parts of the mainstream that you tend to ignore or neglect the oldest technologies as well as the newest technologies, right? So if we ignore let's set aside the conversation around the fact that cryptocurrencies need like a lot of regulation security, like scrutiny. We're also looking at these ancient systems, like you said, and it's not just airlines because airlines, again, a unique sort of chaos because of all the moving pieces. I think United Air pilots were recently striking as well to demand fair wages and that sort of thing. We can't just I think we'll fall into the trap of being too like narrow focus if we only focus on airlines right now. We need to look at all the other industries that are using ancient software.
I mean, rail,
like, medical, banking,
rail. I mean, the freight, our freight rail system could have collapsed over the past couple of weeks because workers were just like, were demanding a couple days of sick leave that was actually paid.
There's a lot of terrible systems in place that have just coasted so far because of no scrutiny, because they're still running. Let's not.
Sure.
What's that saying that like if something's not broke, don't fix it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, no.
Don't rock the boat. Yada, yada, yada.
Fix it. In Singapore. Sorry to bring up Singapore as a shining beacon of greatness.
Let's talk about the state of Singapore. Yes. Go.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of problems with Singapore. But every 5 years, this government like gives everything sort of a facelift. We like look at what's cracked and what's sort of like foundationally challenged and try to like make it so it will last forever, right? We keep refreshing things.
I think Singapore has the ability, you know, like
we're small.
A lot, but also the government can just point at something and be like, fix that.
Yep.
And in America, it's harder,
right?
Because you have to get Congress to agree on funding. You have to get the actual strategies approved. You have two warring political factions, one which... Hey, however you want to see it. I think one side literally does not want to fix anything and is happy to see things break and complain when it falls apart. And the other side is like, let's just like regulate better. Let's get more funding to things. Let's hire more people. It is hard to fix things. And I think anybody who's worked in government has probably realized this. My wife used to work for the DOE of New York, and just like hearing about the things that would happen. Just like, can we get this school? A little more money for the kids. And it just like makes you want to rub your temples and have a migraine because nothing can actually be fixed. So this is all ranty stuff. But I think the bigger takeaway here is that, we are seeing a lot of systems fall apart. We are seeing a lot of like older ancient tech that we have relied on And we just kind of hope and praise it keeps working. And that's starting to crumble. So I'm hoping that we're starting to see, like, okay, there are alternatives. We also don't have to fly everywhere. We also don't have to drive everywhere. Maybe some of this attention should also be pushed back to, let's see what we could do with rail. Let's see what we could do, like, maybe building Amtrak back up. And I know something, people talk about Joe Biden, like, being the Amtrak guy. He loves trains. Well, it turns out trains are pretty cool. Trains are pretty chill, where you don't have to deal with a lot of the garbage you do on an airline, even if you're traveling longer. Like, I would rather sit on a train for 6 to 7 hours, you know, rather than do all the crap you need to do to take a 2-hour flight. You know, get to the airport, get ready to go through security, be sandwiched in a tin can and not, like, have any food. You go to take a train. It's so easy.
Why Hyperloop technology is so exciting for some people right now, right? People want to have the same travel time as air travel, but none of that, like, really irritating.
Maybe. You don't need to go to Hyperloop. You just need to go to high-speed rail. You just need to...
Yeah.
We have technology. We have the Excel Alliance in the Northeast Coast. You bring up Hyperloop, and it's funny, Sherlyn. I don't know. Did you see that video of the one, like, Hyperloop tunnel in Las Vegas
stuck, right?
No, it's garbage.
Full of traffic.
It's garbage. Really? It's a dumb idea. It's one tunnel that fits one Tesla at a time needs to drive. You still need to... Oh my God, they invented public transportation in the dumbest, worst, most expensive way possible. So yeah, systems like that probably won't save us, but maybe with a lot of these things falling apart, we could take a closer look at, like, hey, maybe getting some people to take trains rather than flights everywhere. That's actually something, talking about, like, a country that can just, like, do things, but that's something that's helped China out a lot over the past couple decades. Is, like, they just, like, high-speed rail everywhere, and flights within the country just kind of evaporated because it's easier to take a super fast train two cities a couple hundred miles apart rather than the mess of air travel. And it's cheaper too, and it's better for the environment because these are electric trains. But anyway, that's a whole mess. Who knows what's going to happen to this, but we're going to stay on top of the story because we all fly. Flying is something we all do, and I wish it was safer. I wish it was more secure, and I wish, like, we weren't relying on ancient systems. And Sherlyn, I think you wanted to bring up something too about flying that okay, you're concerned about.
So I'm not so much concerned about this.
You're very concerned.
Amused. I am mostly amused and also kind of intrigued. I kind of want to be a part of this. Anyway, I saw on Reddit the other day something called Deli Mike. I don't know if y'all have heard of
this. No, I'm hungry now, though. Okay.
No, don't be, because this is a plane that appears to be haunted. It's not actually haunted. Basically, from what I can tell, at least from the Reddit scrolling that I did, it is a Turkish Airlines plane, an Airbus A340, and it's known as, and Deli Mike is like the Turkish, I guess, name for it. In English, it translates to Crazy Mike. It's a it's an unreliable plane that is in service.
Why are we still flying this plane? Okay.
It was in service. It was in service 1996 to 2019. Okay, so
that's,
like,
still too long.
A significant still amount of time. Mm-hmm. Something like 25 years. Okay, and it would do things like randomly. Things would flicker on and off. I don't know, like, something would, like, break during your flight, and people would just like, "Oh yeah, that's Crazy Mike." Like, the plane is.
It's not what I want to hear when I'm in the air.
In the air,
tens of thousands of feet in the air. That's not what I want to hear. Just
I want to do.
Yeah. Just saying.
And so, so according to some of the technicians, part of the maintenance subsidiary of Turkish Airlines, they would say things like, oh yeah, Deli Mike can fly to the other side of the world without any problems if she wants to. But if she doesn't feel like it, she won't move even one, like, meter on the ground. What? So, like, you load all these passengers onto Deli Mike and you just wait and hope for the best. And if she feels like it, she might crash. If she doesn't feel like it, she won't. You know,
it seems bad.
So it's not just America, I guess.
It's not just America. I mean, listen, we do wax poetic about other countries and how they handle systems. I have bet my worst flight experiences have been in Germany because of freaking. I flew at a point where I think it was Berlin Air was just like, hey, we're going to be bankrupt. So I was on a plane there. I saw that news on my phone as I was like, getting on a flight to eventually end up in Cologne. I was like, this seems bad. Flight was delayed 2 hours. I get there. The transfer just wasn't happening at the proper time. So the transfer plane took my bag. I got stuck at the airport, probably in Berlin for like an hour or two. Several days went by until I could actually get my bag back. Because in Cologne, you have to go into one of the little planes. The little planes are terrifying. The little planes with the giant propellers.
I love those, but yeah.
They're very cute, but I'm also like, do we still do this? Is this still a thing? This is like a giant boat plane with two huge propellers, and it took like 20 people to Cologne. Anyway, there are a lot of issues. Certainly,
there's a lot of other issues. And to your point, right? There's other countries have airline issues as well. Like Ryanair and EasyJet, I think, have bad reputations for a reason. I don't know if it's because of Ryanair, just for the clientele,
but yeah,
exactly. Right. Like it's cheaper budget airlines. That was the last time the airline industry was disrupted, which is when they introduced like shorter domestic and much cheaper flights without any full service, which without meals.
For some consumers, it ended up being good things. That was Southwest in the US. That was Spirit and a lot of things. Eventually, they all got kind of expensive. And actually, the process of being a consumer in those flights is kind of awful. It's like being cattle.
And then the big airlines just borrowed their ideas. Like, oh, if people will fly things without food, we'll just stop giving people food.
Let's take away all the screens. All those screens behind their chairs. Let's just take those away. We don't need those
anymore. You can pay for that. Yeah. Oh, pay to choose your seat is my favorite most recently.
Okay. So podcast producer Ben also mentioned something, news that we had seen. It turns out like Elon Musk basically announced Hyperloop to block CalRail. Or to block any development of it. And this is a sort of like insidious thing too, where new technologies can be like, oh yeah, we got this solved. We've got this new tech. We could totally build it. It's totally legit. Don't worry about funding any of this other stuff that could actually help people. And to me, that is one of those insidious, unforgivable things where I'm like, oh man, they've been trying to get CalRail moving for a while. There have been all sorts of forces within California to stop that. Huge roadblock. And we have one Hyperloop running now, and it's a complete just like a future disaster. It looks like something you would see in Total Recall or something. At least Total Recall had like robot taxi drivers that worked, but like a very dumb future. I think that's the thing that's angering me the most. The future shouldn't be so dumb, folks, and at least the systems we rely on shouldn't be.
I also want to point out, because a person in our chat mentioned how bad airlines Remington Hollow, I believe, said airlines also mishandle and break and damage wheelchairs often. Yep. And I want to say another thing that I'm really upset, and I'll end this on like a future-looking note, but like I'm really upset about how so uninclusive airlines are. If you're a person with disabilities, if you're a person that is, you know, overweight or you need more room, you have to pay for an extra seat, or you have to pay for like three seats, or you have to pay for like an upgrade. And the way you're treated in that whole process doesn't often come off very humane. I just read a really heartbreaking story on Reddit about a person that tried to ship themselves to see their dying dad. It was not great. I don't want to like pontificate on the morality or whatever the benefits of body,
it's awful.
Like
it's
size
awful.
Or whatever.
I mean,
but
pets are dying.
Fair.
Yeah.
Right.
Things like that.
Then the thing I want to
Yeah.
Right. So the note I want to end on is like, as we look forward and we think about building better systems for us all, please keep in mind that people are all not one size, or not all with, you know, the same able-bodied individuals. Design with more people in mind. Design with a broader spectrum of people in mind, I guess.
Well said, Sherlyn. Let's move on to some other news. Let's move on to devices, because we are traditionally very, very excited about new types of devices, like dual screen devices, something like maybe the Surface Duo 3, which we supposedly were going to see last year. So, Sherlyn, you've reviewed the Surface Duo 1 and the Surface Duo 2, I think have come... Basically, I think you've been very fair with your reviews, saying like they're good ideas, but there are issues. Did you see this story about Microsoft reportedly axing the Surface Duo 3 in favor of a true foldable? Oh my god!
Yeah, you and I both saw this and dropped it in our prep for this show. I am like, cool. I feel bad.
I feel bad for Microsoft.
I think there is some value to a dual screen form factor, but I think Microsoft didn't figure it out. It's sad, but a lot of people have rightly pointed out that foldables can achieve everything that dual screens can without that hinge in the middle. And the problem with the hinge was always that it would eat content. It would eat content. Mm-hmm. Other than mm-hmm. that, it was fine. But then now people want to move on to like a foldable screen, which is like, some people have to live with a crease. Some people hate the crease. So
I think the crease looks really bad too. Like either way is a compromise. I think so. When we first talked about this and when we first got our hands on the Surface Duo, I remember when Microsoft basically brought us to a small event, we could touch it for like 5 minutes. You know, that was all we had with the Surface Duo. I came away from that event being like, you know what, this is legit. Like, you can build this right now. The dual screen experience isn't great, but it's like, it's better than what the first Galaxy Fold was, I think, at the time, and easier to make and cheaper to make. I think Microsoft fumbled the software, basically, like the first Surface Duo, software-wise, was a revamped version of Android, but nothing special. There weren't too many things that really took advantage of that dual screen form factor. There weren't many third parties really jumping on that either. It always felt like a stopgap, right? It felt like Microsoft is going to do this until they could build an actual foldable. I remember your view was pretty lukewarm on the first Surface Duo. Did you feel better on the Surface Duo 2? Do you think they made any improvements?
I think Microsoft the camera was better. Is confused. Yeah. Like, no, but the camera was better, but the bump was stupid. But you couldn't flip it all the way around for it to be a single screen-ish device anymore. You couldn't have the two screens facing out without it being, you know, it couldn't be flush anymore. And I get it, but I'm so sorry. The bump was stupid. And I think they made some changes. They made that little visible little peak bar thing where you could see light.
Hated it.
It would light up. Yeah. It didn't do much. It's just like every now and then it'd be like, oh, I can see my battery charger status from far away. It could be a bedside clock or something from far. Like, come on. Yeah, I don't know. I feel bad for Microsoft. It tried.
At least they tried. Remember, remember who was it that tried another foldable? Was it Motorola that brought back the Razor? The Razor. Yeah, everyone tried. Yeah. Not everyone tried. Some companies tried. I think Motorola was like, hey guys, remember the Razor? It's back. And flip foldable.
Motorola
phone
is
form.
Trying everything.
Yeah.
Talk about the Think Phone at CES.
So but anyway. Would you be more excited about a true foldable Duo, basically, or a foldable Surface? Do you have any hope that Microsoft could accomplish that?
Well, it boils down to what they're trying to make it do. If it's a phone, it's hard to imagine Microsoft and Android, a team up between the two of them being really that great because they have a lot of good software, but I don't know. From what I've seen on the Duos so far, I'm not holding my breath. I think for like a surface, like a tablet and a foldable tablet, it's very intriguing, right? I think that there could one day be a good foldable surface. I just wonder. I think the keyboard experience is going to be tricky to master.
Maybe the thing is the Surface Neo, which we never actually saw, and that was supposed.
Well,
to
we
be...
saw it on Red Notice. I'm still pissed.
We saw it a little bit, but. Never actually came to light. That was the slightly bigger version of the Surface Duo thing that was supposedly going to be running Windows. I do think at some point Microsoft was just like, you know what? Let's just make this an actual foldable computer. You know, like let's, based on what we've seen from Lenovo at CES, and also like Asus has showed off like foldable laptop concepts for a while. I do think like that idea, Microsoft can't build phones, but they can build computers. So maybe taking that energy, give me a 10-inch tablet that can fold into a nice little halvesies. Maybe stick a keyboard in there like they were planning to in the Surface Neo. That had the plan to like put the keyboard in the back or something. That could be something. That could be a computer I walk around with and use as a tablet, but also use as like a laptop when I need to, I think. Yeah.
We'll see. Honestly, not a lot of hope right now. I think it'll take at least 2 more years for Microsoft to really give us something that's compelling.
I agree. The report is basically that the Surface Duo 3 was ready, like pretty much done, and was going to be announced last year, and Microsoft was just like, nah. And doesn't make me think we'll see a foldable this year, but maybe if they like just, they didn't release that thing, sat down like hyper-focused on like being like, okay, we can announce the actual true Surface foldable this year, and it'll be available next year. I think that's possible. So maybe by the end of the year, we'll hear an announcement
or something. I can just imagine Panos in his living room with a grand piano in the background going, should we release this?
Yeah.
No.
No.
It's not good enough.
Not good enough.
That's my Panos impression.
That's
my Panos impression.
He's, yeah. Yeah. Panos Panay, the head of Windows hardware, basically, and Microsoft hardware devices. Love that guy because he truly loves his devices. He also does sometimes come across like a robot. It's kind of funny. Like I did do an hour long walk with him around the Surface device that nobody cares about. But his intensity around these devices is something. He does have a piano in his house. We actually learned this. And I think during an event,
his daughter was playing.
His daughter was playing, but also he would like be like, you know, sometimes she's just not good enough. And I wonder, like, is he as intense with his kids? His daughter is named Sophia, just like my daughter. I do remember that. I was like, are you as intense with your kids? We're not going to ship this piano recital. You're just not, you're not passing QA. Sorry.
Just ships it with bugs. Yeah.
Just ships it with bugs. No, Panos will not ship anything with bugs. In other news, President Biden issued an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal on Wednesday, surprisingly, calling for bipartisan legislation to keep big tech in check. And he's basically targeting three overall categories. He's telling the two groups to find common ground when it comes to protecting privacy, competition, and kids. Have you seen the news from this op-ed, Trillin? Because it's very interesting. It does seem like the idea of Section 230 comes up again in terms of reforming it or changing it in a way that makes politicians happy. Do you have any thoughts on this?
I mean, the news broke somewhat late yesterday. I haven't really had time to dig in, but I think I don't enjoy the adversarial stance people tend to take with these sorts of things, whereas like keeping big tech in check or whatever. It's like, yes, we need regulation, but it can also be collaborative. I think it's more, I don't know, maybe I'm naive, right? I feel like maybe if there was mutual education and mutual understanding of what each other wants. I know we can't trust big tech to just do what it, like,
yeah,
the good thing, the right thing.
It sounds like you're assuming everybody are rational agents. And
I mean, I've been proven wrong because this country is weird.
Not just this country, but everything is kind of falling
Everyone,
apart.
Everyone, actually, yes, this is
post-pandemic.
The whole world is weird.
I do think it is kind of funny how when it comes to like big tech legislation or complaining about technology companies, that is sometimes the one thing Democrats and Republicans can both agree on for different reasons. But like everybody has their issues with Facebook. Everybody has. Remember when they brought in Mark Zuckerberg and just grilled him?
My favorite is when they're like, why can't I see my friend's post? Like one of the people was like, why don't my posts appear on this person? I love it when they air their personal grievances.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think like this op-ed and also being in the Wall Street Journal, which is basically overall conservative newspaper, especially on the op-ed side, but basically being in a place where he's like trying to bring people together around some of this stuff. We're talking about the ideas of regulation and kind of like what can help some of these companies get in check. We've been talking about huge, huge mergers like Microsoft and Activision Blizzard. Those sorts of things, which are currently like in conversation right now. I do think we got to rethink a little bit. And maybe we also need like a whole new generation of lawmakers to kind of come in there to be like, hey, I actually know how to, you know, I know how to do this on Instagram and on my phone. Not an idiot, but I have bigger questions about like how certain things work. And I think we are kind of moving towards that. So I guess we'll see. We'll certainly be keeping an eye on this and reporting if any of that actual collaboration ends up happening. Did you see the story, Sherlyn, about NASA funding ideas for a Titan seaplane and faster deep space travel?
Please tell me more.
So we have a story here from John Fingus saying NASA is willing to find unusual concepts. It's handing out $175,000 to initial study grants to 14 projects that could be useful in missions in and beyond the solar system. So there's the Titan Air seaplane that could do something like fly through the nitrogen and methane atmosphere of Saturn's moon Titan and sail its oceans. That could be
nice,
interesting, a flying boat sort of idea. And there are also other ideas about like speeding up missions that are heading towards the outer edge of our solar system and potentially even into interstellar space. So these are all things like we hear about in science fiction. We think about like the techniques we have now are not, we cannot get to Yeah, we cannot get out of our solar system with the current rocket designs and ship designs we have now. We're going to need some other ideas. So it is, this is kind of fun. I don't think it's going to amount to much, but I think it's kind of a fun idea. Is there, I know you're a big fantasy reader, Shalim, but is there like a sci-fi space concept you would like us to see? Like to actually make a reality?
Like a something from a show that I want to be
or
a real
movie.
Thing.
Yeah, yeah. Like
the
one
Sonic
thing we
Screwdriver,
should have.
Obviously. Like what?
I'm thinking something that's maybe, I don't even know if it's more grounded, but like the idea of wormholes, right? The idea that space-time can bend and connect two potential areas. I think the movie Interstellar, which certainly got a lot of love, but I think also needs to be like examined too in terms of like how certain aspects of it do seem like super accurate because they work together with NASA folks to like design the look of a black hole. And it turns out like future simulations prove that overall look to be true. But just that idea, I think, would be kind of cool. I don't know. I'd love to see proved eventually. Mm-hmm. I'm big into wormholes. That's just me.
I will say that our producer, Julio Barrientos, says the idea of secure and well-maintained transportation infrastructure is something that
you would
like to see.
That would be
great.
We can't go into space if we can't even get freaking trains running.
Yeah.
Or built.
Yeah, imagine. That is a science fiction idea right there. Yeah.
It's actually kind of tough. That is something I've noticed too. Like, it is harder to imagine a better future when like our current present is such a mess. But anyway, I'm hoping it gets better. We'll see. There's also a story about Hyundai managing to bring its crab walking e-corner technology into an Ioniq EV. And
this is so weird.
I do like the idea of crab walking. I like the idea of cars that whose wheels can turn to the side and move directly left or right. There are some like off-road cars that have the ability to like move their wheels independently. This is essentially like you pull up to a parallel parking spot directly next to it. Your wheels just shift and move your car left or right straight on. There's no turning. There's no special techniques. You just kind of go in. I wish this was real. I wish this was like in more things. The story is that this tech could make its way into production vehicles as early as 2025. Sherlyn is somebody who sort of kind of drives, says she can drive.
Sure.
Would you rather do this than learn to parallel park properly?
Yes.
Have you ever tried parking?
You haven't seen this video of me trying to learn parallel parking.
Is there a video?
Took me to like a, there is a video. I'll send it to you. It's me and Chris Velasco. Uh-huh. He took me to like a very like, it's a lot, like an empty lot somewhere. And he set up a fake parallel parking sort of situation for me. I did it really well. And then he goes out. He's like, all right, let's go get a video of this because you're doing it good now, right? I drive, totally mess up, like just knock over the cone and whatever. It was great.
Did you make it into the space at least?
No, I had to go all the way around again. But I've made it a few times. Like I know how to do it. It's just that one time on video, we were just like dying. We're like, of course on video. It's not. This looks like it would save me having to learn that.
I think it would save a lot of people time. And also, it stinks. It stinks that we have to like basically do this annoying thing to get into, to wedge into spaces. Also, I don't know. I feel like a lot of cities that have parking shouldn't just be relying on parallels, like having things on the parallel.
I got distracted by a dark little tidbit that Julio shared, which is that he learned to park in learned to drive in a cemetery. Great.
That's cool. It's quiet. You can't disturb anybody.
It's an October story. You're disturbing the dead.
Yeah, they're fine. They're fine. I do like, I actually just took my wife to an empty parking lot to be like, we got to practice parking. We got to practice some fundamentals. And that was an hour of just being like, yeah, this is going to take a while. So whatever tech we can do.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever tech.
Exactly.
Give me all the tech. We're going to need all the tech.
Crab walking. Crab walking it is.
Let's move over through a couple other stories. We do know some events are coming up soon. Xbox and Bethesda announced that there's going to be a showcase of games on January 25th, including Redfall, Forza Motorsport, and others. Starfield, I feel like the game a lot of people are waiting for. That is the big, like, sort of open space game epic coming from Bethesda. That is going to have a whole separate event later in the year. I'm not sure if any of this means anything to you, Sherlyn, but I do think Redfall, we've gotten some more details about Redfall. That does sound super cool. Like a sort of like systems-based,
I mean, this is Xbox. I don't have an Xbox yet. I know I should get the Xbox Game Pass.
You should get Game Pass. You should stream some games. You could do that on anything. You could do that on your computers right now. And you could do it on a Chromebook. Amazingly.
I know. Amazing.
I mean, listen, we introduced Sherlyn to Vampire Survivors and they lost you for like a week. I think you've already clocked like 50 hours.
No. 2 weeks. Yeah. Oh yeah. And I've maxed out everything. I'm elite at this game. I am so good.
Have you killed death yet?
OPAF. There's a death?
You can kill death. Oh, you're not good enough if you haven't seen death yet, Sherlyn. I'm sorry.
I've stopped at the third like unlocked area. And then I was like, this is repetitive.
If you last for longer than half an hour, you have to learn about weapon evolutions. You got to learn about if you last.
I have
for,
weapon evos. Yeah.
Yeah. If you've lasted over half an hour, death shows up and just kills you. But well, if you're good enough, you could kill him right back.
I didn't know that was going to happen because I sat there for 20 minutes waiting to die. Because I literally just sat there. I was so overpowered at this point. Nothing could get at me. So I was like, yeah. And I was god level. And then nothing. I was like, oh, I guess I beat the game, right? Because I'm sitting there waiting to die and nothing is happening. So now that I know death will get me, just I would go back and let death get me.
Keep going. Let death get you. Or maybe you'll be powerful enough to defeat death, which is the ultimate goal, I would say. You also wrote up, or at least brought up the story, Sherlyn. There is another Samsung event. The first of the year happening on February 1st. What can you give us some thoughts of what you expect there?
Yeah, this is usually the Unpacked where we see the Galaxy S flagships of the year. And to be clear, the Galaxy S flagship line now includes what was formerly the Note line, right? Because the Ultra has taken over as the stylus phone for Samsung. So, you know, on February 1st, we're expecting to see at least two flagship S series phones, if not three. Typically, we see the S22. This year, it'll be S23, right? So the S23, S23 Plus, S23 Ultra.
It really does feel like 23 years since we've been seeing Galaxy phones. Like, they had a big number jump at some point, right?
They did.
What was
the
big jump?
They jumped from 10 to 20.
I think after Apple was like, oh, we're catching up. We're on like iPhone, you know, 14 now.
10.
Samsung is just like, 20. Sure.
Yeah. They went from the S10 to S20. We're like, oh, yeah, cool.
Numbers
we all
don't
were
matter.
Like, yeah, that makes sense.
Nothing matters. Well, because, yeah.
Right. But it matches now with the year, right? So that sort of makes sense. Yeah.
Okay,
like,
sure.
You know, S23 for 2023. Sure. It totally makes sense.
And actually, I guess it's better than saying both Galaxy S13 and iPhone 13.
Right.
Like in the same, like it's a completely different way to differentiate yourself. Okay. I'm sure we're going to hear more about this event. Are you excited, Sherlyn, for Samsung, your favorite company to cover?
I just finished CES, bro.
Give us a break.
People might be confused because the event is February 1st, but remember, we start to cover these things ahead of time. So, yeah, there's a very short break, but this is better than the year they did their event right after CES.
Oh,
so you know what? Thank you,
disaster.
Samsung, for waiting a few weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you for waiting a few weeks.
Give us time to take a break. You also had the story, Sherlyn, or you brought it up about Google decoupling some Android accessibility features from OS updates. This is something Google has done before to basically make it easier to update specific things. What's going on here?
Yeah, this is specific to the, I believe, certain apps that allow accessibility features that used to be like updated alongside your OS update, which sucks, right? Then you have to wait for the OS
update cycle to get
new features. Right, and decoupling it from that means you can also carry it to other phones. So older phones that might not be on the same OS level or newer phones that are on different OS levels may be able to also run the app that you need to get your accessibility features. So I just thought that this was a nice, thoughtful thing. And it again, you know me, I love to do the accessibility shout-out.
And also more features. I remember when in Google Play stuff at one point was broken out from the security stuff. So that like really helped ramp up security patches, and that made life a lot better for all of us. So,
yeah.
Cool. Thank you, Sherlyn.
So and just to be extra clear, so what's happening is Google's taking out some of these accessibility features that used to be just built into Android settings and stuff like that into a separate app called Switch Access, which is what is enabling the individual like updates and update cycle thing.
I kind of, you know what, I have not had an Android phone, or at least I have a couple actually, but I haven't like spent a lot of time with one for a while. So I think I got to get like one of the new Pixels or something. Like I'm feeling the itch just to play more with Android. So we shall see.
Great.
If only there were good Android tablets, you know? If only.
Well, you could get a Samsung. So
I could. I actually have a Galaxy Tab S2 or 3 from like from 10 years ago. And
it's no longer running.
It's still great. That screen, though, it's like it was an OLED screen back then, and they were the first to bring it to like any tablet, and it still looks good. Let's look at some news happening around Engadget. Just want to shout out our review of HBO's The Last of Us, which it turns out is pretty good. Nathan Ingram wrote up the review for us, and he is our resident, like, Last of Us stan, just loves everything about that game. And I think he was really happy to find that the show brought, like, it does cover a lot of the same things as the first game, but there are some major narrative changes. There are some changes for storylines for side characters that I think people found really impactful. And I think overall, like, people are loving the show. The reviews have been super positive, so I cannot wait to check this thing out when it premieres on HBO very soon. Don't have the exact date in front of me. But it seems good. Like, this is really all we could hope for. So, yeah, looking forward to checking this out, and check out our review.
Hey. Mm-hmm. And speaking of HBO, breaking news as of right now as we're recording this, but HBO Max just announced its first price hike, which will be effective today, the 12th of January. The ad-free version of HBO Max will start to cost, I believe, $15.99 plus taxes, which it used to cost $14.99.
Yeah, that's not too bad. I do feel like a lot of people may also get these things from their cell carriers exactly. And other things. So I forget where I'm getting HBO Max from at this point. But
I got mine from my Verizon package, former employers.
We also have a story about the best streaming devices you can buy in 2023 by Nicole Lee. And pretty much what you expect. But, you know, we've got the Roku Streaming Stick 4K, which I really genuinely love. I still think the Apple TV 4K is, especially now that the price is better and it's coming with the better remote, is still like the best overall one, especially if you're in the Apple ecosystem. But Roku stuff is fantastic. Do you have a preference, Trillin? Like, would you rather have the Chromecast rather than a Roku or an Apple TV?
Currently, I have a Google TV mm-hmm. that also has a Chromecast with Google TV mm-hmm. plugged in, as well as Apple TV. I use Apple TV as my backup and failsafe whenever my Chromecast is being weird. I generally prefer the Chromecast because I use Cast a lot. I use a lot of Google. Again, I'm a Google girl. Also, shout out to that one person who tried to call me an Apple stan or something on the YouTube comment. I was like, you're so far from the truth, but okay.
It turns out they don't know what they're talking about ever.
Believe what you want, bro. But So I'm a big Google stan, and I think that's why I'm still like a big Chromecast user.
I'm glad like Google has not fully collapsed and given up on Chromecast or the idea of Chromecast like they have for so many other consumer products. So hey, glad that's still going strong. I'm glad they has Android TV built in right now too. So it's all real mm-hmm. good. Let's move on Google to what TV, we're working on. I'm prepping for Sundance, which is actually beginning next week. I am not traveling there. I wish I was. I wish I had the time and energy to. But I'll be covering a lot of stuff remotely. Trillin, normally you cover that with me, but I know you'll be off for a bit. Enjoy your time off, but maybe you can catch some movies.
I will be. Yeah, I'm registered for Sundance. I'm going to help try to watch some of the movies. I will be spending next week with my family, spending Chinese New Year with my family in person for the first time in 10 years, y'all. Chinese New Year is huge for me. And I've never spent it like in person with my family, like haven't done it in 10 years. I am looking forward to it, y'all.
Very cool. Very cool. Is there anything you're working on you want to shout out?
Let me think. Okay. Oh, well, so usually my end of year accessibility update is published before the end of the year. But the last few weeks, I've just been sick and sick and sick. So it got a little delayed. And so that is coming out. It's being edited. So look for it, I think, some point this week.
Very cool. Let's move on to our pop culture picks. What do you have? Again, you're trying to keep secrets from me. So what do you have in store?
Honestly, this isn't like a big secret. I managed to catch up on some movies and shows I've been meaning to watch. I saw Glass Onion. We were talking about Glass Onion, mm-hmm. right? A while ago. Mm-hmm. Okay. Finally saw it. Great. Loved it. And I also saw The Menu. I think, I'm not sure if we've mentioned it on the show.
I forget if I mentioned it, but I did like The Menu.
Yeah. You know? I don't think we've mentioned it. So this is our official recommendation. The Menu is incredible. It features Ralph Fiennes. Ralph Fiennes, who I know him best as Voldemort. Yeah.
Yes. Because the only movies you watch are like little franchisings. Yes, yes.
Yeah. So anyway, this is Voldemort as a chef, basically, right?
Voldemort as Gordon Ramsay. How about that? Voldemort as Ramsay.
No, Gordon Ramsay is less dead. Like,
Gordon Ramsay is an angry, mean man. But yes. There's a point in that movie where he goes full on Gordon Ramsay. I was like, oh yeah, you're going to do that?
Yeah, kind of.
You're cooking the scallop kinda. Like that? Oh, look at this. Yeah. Look at this delicious meal he's creating for us. So that's fun.
amazing. Ray finds places very well. He brings the perfect amount of Voldemort to Gordon Ramsay, which is quite a lot. But also stars Anya Taylor-Joy, Nicholas Hoult, who I love. And she's great in this as well. Basically, really looking at class and just snobbery, really. Ray Fiennes' character runs this very like high-end restaurant that costs like $1,200 per seat to eat.
It's on an island. You get to take a boat.
Yeah, it's very exclusive. It's almost like Glass Onion, right?
Those restaurants do exist. Actually, and yeah, it is sort of like Glass Onion, but those restaurants do exist. There's one in near Seattle. There are others like in Europe, I believe, too. It does. That movie hits at something which always kind of irks me about like fine dining, where I'm like, I don't feel comfortable here. You pay a lot, and then you don't feel
good
about it.
You pay $1,200 to eat a morsel of food. Like it's like one, and then like so the movie also pays a lot of attention to like the food shots. Right, they hired a whole different production team just to shoot the menu shots and the food like stuff, and they really hire people who have experience in kitchens to play some of the chefs here. Yep. I mean, I went down the rabbit hole of like watching the behind the scenes stuff too. I mean, it's just really great if you're in the mood for a very wacky but ultimately dark show. Yep. And it's kind of a comedy too, right?
It's funny. Like it's a dark comedy. It's funny, I'd say. But also, I watch a lot of Chef's Table. I watch a lot of things about food culture and dining. I'm like, I like hearing about these things and learning about them. I don't necessarily like going to a lot of these restaurants. So this is sort of like a rebuttal to that whole idea of fine dining. Anyway, if you liked this, Sherlyn, I have a movie for you. It's called
Pig. I have a second thing to talk about after this.
But related to this, you should see Pig, which is the Nicolas Cage movie about a man who loves his pig, but he's a former star chef. And that movie is wild and goes places. So anyway, check that out. What's your next movie?
Okay. So my next thing is something you've actually talked about before on this show. I'm pretty sure it's Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities. I was just watching it on Netflix because I was suddenly in the mood for horror. Holy
It's good.
I had to skip that one. The reason I remembered you mentioned it is because the second episode
the
is
rats?
Called The Junkyard.
The rats. Yeah. You don't want to watch that one.
I did not. No. I did not. I skipped it. My phobia was
that
already
one is
like,
your
oh
nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah, my literal nightmare. So the first episode was great. It was about, I can't remember now, you know why? Because the third episode, the one that stars F. Murray Abraham.
F. Murray Abraham. Love him. My God.
That episode called The Autopsy.
So good.
One of the best things on television I've seen. Like the ending, it's just so gripping. It's ridiculous. The storytelling is great. And every episode in this series, even though it's helped like created by Guillermo del Toro and is introduced by him every
He's
episode.
He's introduced,
But every episode is directed by a different director. So this was David Pryor.
This was David Pryor, and he did a movie called The Empty Man, which is another like cool, weird, creepy horror movie. I think you'd appreciate it. I feel like
loved this one. I loved the next episode, which was about this beautiful lotion thing that this woman applies, and in the hopes of being. It reminded me of Black Mirror. Basically, this is Black Mirror, but with a lot more
horror. More
horror. And I loved it.
I mean, it's back to like Twilight Zones, back to like Tales from the Crypt a little bit too.
So well done.
Yeah. There's a lot of.
Every episode was very well done.
There's no bad ones. I will say some are like outright. Some are just weird. There's one called The Viewing by Panos Cosmatos. And he's a guy, he's a director of like completely trippy, surreal things. So it is. It's just a wild experience. It's more like a drug trip than anything. And the final one, it's called The Murmuring, which I think is actually one of the best overall. Like, it's basically a movie. It's a short film.
Okay. That's the one.
One of the best horror things, and honestly, one of the best things made last year. So check out all this. There's no bad episodes,
Yeah, except for the rats one.
Except for the rats one. Okay, I get it. I want to shout out a movie that I also think you'd enjoy, which is called The Big Four. And this premiered a couple weeks ago on Netflix. It's directed by Timo Chajanto, an Indonesian director who's made some great action movies like The Night Comes for Us. He has worked with Iko Uwais, who has been in like the Raid movies and things like that. This movie is a lot of fun. If you like watching old school Jackie Chan movies, like 80s, 90s Jackie Chan movies, which are like a little bit silly, a little bit fun. This one's about a family of elite assassins, but they're kind of goofy and they're kind of fun. Something happens to their family and they basically break apart and have to come together for a mission of revenge. But it's also, it's very sweet. I think overall, like it's just a lot of fun. The action is really well done too. I like all the characters. I love all the actors in here too. And Timo is just like, I think, one of the more interesting action directors right now. So if you want, like, I watch so many movies, guys. Like, I watched like 20 to 30 movies in December, preparing for top 10 lists and preparing for all the stuff I have to do for critics groups I'm a part of. I'm part of the Atlanta Film Critics Circle. I watched a lot of stuff. Most of it's really depressing and very much like prestige-y movies. So I wanted some fun action. This movie certainly delivered. That's The Big Four. It's on Netflix right now.
Is it in Bahasa or in English? Or
it is. I believe it's in Bahasa. Yeah.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Okay. I need to practice. That's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Benton Elman. You can find Devendra online at...
I don't know, Twitter. I'm still doing Twitter. I can't quit Twitter, so I'm at Devendra on Twitter. I'm Devendra at Mastodon.social on Mastodon, and I podcast about movies and TV at the Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to practice Bahasa Indonesia or Melayu with me, I am at Sherlyn Low, also still on Twitter for now. I don't know that I can quit either. My Mastodon's too complicated. You can also find me on Instagram at Sherlynstagram, because I'm funny like that. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts.